Welcome to the Casey Kowar Show, a celebration of words. I'm delighted to have back as my guest for the third time, James Lee Burke. And we're coming up on a season which is going to be of great delight to readers. We're going to have two new books by Mr. Burke. This interview today is going to focus on a book of stories titled Jesus Out to Sea, which has recently been published by Simon & Schuster. And first of all, Jim, thanks so much for taking time to speak with us today.
Well, thanks for having me on your show again.
Now, Jesus Out to Sea is a collection of 11 short stories, and we'll mention that in July, on July 17th, there will be a new Dave Robichaux novel, Tin Roof Blowdown, which we'll have you back on in July for that. But these 11 stories, which comprise Jesus Out to Sea, are being published in a very nice trade paperback, which I think is a very nice nice way to present this to the readers.
Yes, I think the format's really nice. It's and it's affordable.
Mm-hmm.
$12. So
yeah,
it's a pretty good buy. I have a bias about this.
Yeah, I understand. I understand. And also, congratulations! I just read where Pegasus Descending was a Dagger Award finalist, which is the biggest crime writing prize in the world. So,
yeah.
So that's
awards are in July.
That's quite a feather in your cap as well.
Well, it's a very nice honor.
Jim, with Jesus Out to Sea, this is, I believe, your second collection of short stories. You had The Convict from LSU Press back in 1985.
That's right.
And I thought what might be nice for the listeners is if we talk about a couple of the stories in detail. There are 11 of them. And I think that the title story, Jesus Out to Sea, we'll save for last because, to me, that's a masterpiece.
Thanks.
And so why don't we start out, the first story in the collection is Winter Light, and this is a, there was a line in Winter Light that just jumped out at me, and it said, Roger tells Gretchen, these kind of men vicariously revise their lives through the suffering of others. And
yeah.
That line kind of, to me, really cut to the chase of Winter Light and in that story. So, if you would tell us a little bit about the short story Winter Light.
Well, it deals with an English professor living up a creek, a drainage here in western Montana. A man who's out of sync with his colleagues and his times, and he befriends a young woman who is being sexually exploited by his terrible academic, and the main character explains to her that there are people, political leaders as well as ordinary individuals, who live vicariously through the suffering of others, which they cause. And normally we recognize these people, according to the professor here, as men who in effect are ashamed of the mediocrity in their own lives, the lack of any martial experience, but it's they who usually champion the wars and send others off to them. Almost always the most bellicose are the people who themselves were found wanting when it was their time, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. And it's some of the characters in Winter Light and some of the characters throughout Jesus Out to Sea. It just seems that there's stories of kind of a human dignity, a lack of it, and people that just aren't hardwired with any sense of moral boundaries.
Well, there are those among us like that. They make good employees at mid-level management.
Yeah, exactly. And then I'm interested in the form of the short story. It really allows you as a writer to kind of experiment. And the second story is called The Village, and it's about a 5-page story and about an atrocity. And I always love a dense short story which conveys a great amount of emotional depth in a very brief period of time. Mm-hmm. And being primarily a novelist, is this a challenge, Jim, when you sit down to try to compress like that, or is it just something you enjoy doing just for a change of pace?
Well, I think that story, The Village, is the best short story I ever wrote. And part of a novel titled Burning Angel, but it deals with a massacre in a village in Guatemala, and it's based on a true event. I used a situation, a terrible thing that happened during the Reagan era, when there were mass murders in El Salvador and in Guatemala, and a friend of mine was at that village. And Guatemalan troops arrived in helicopters, U.S. Army helicopters, helicopters provided by the U.S. Army, and they decided to create an object lesson for the villagers, and they did some terrible things, including the murder of the priest, Father Stan Rother, from Oklahoma. He was a Mary Knoll priest, and I knew his sister and his aunt there at the convent in Wichita, Kansas, when I was living there. That's a terrible story, though, but it was one that occurred many times during the 1980s.
Yeah, and it's just a powerful, powerful story, and it was my favorite short one in the collection as well. The third story in the collection is I was just crazy about The Night Johnny Ace Died, and this is it was. You cover so much ground in this story about the music business, Eddie Ray, and there's so many colorful characters in this story that in this one it really has a lot of the emotional resonance almost of a novel in this one.
Well, thanks. I hope to get that one on the screen someday. I was talking to the director, Bertrand Tavernier. He's directing the adaptation of In the Electric Mist with Confederate Dead, and Bertrand agreed that this one would make a grand film. It's a great story, I think, about rock and roll and rockabilly music in the early 50s, and those events are based on real things that happened, the death of Johnny Ace's New Year's Eve, 19, it was Christmas, or I forget, 1954. But I saw Big Mama Thornton play.
Oh, did you really?
Oh, yeah, I sure did. I saw B.B. King and Big Mama Thornton on the same bill. And the auditorium was segregated. Whites had to sit in the balcony. That's how intelligent segregation was. It's funny. Years ago, years later, even, I remember in the New Orleans French Quarter, I was down there about 1961, and there was a joint called the Jazz Room. It was over by Basin. It was a great place, and I had been in there in the 50s, and it was the only joint in the quarter that featured progressive jazz, and man, these guys were great. It was like listening to, Dave Brubeck's bunch. And I went back in 61, and it had been integrated. It was, full of people of color and white people. And I went back in 61, and the joint had been segregated, and the owners had created a plywood wall, and they'd nailed plywood all over the, you know, supports, roof supports,
mm-hmm.
and the whites were walled off in the section that had a jukebox, and the progressive band was over on the black side of the bar.
That's beautiful.
Pretty smart thinking on the part of the owners.
Yes. And the, I got a real kick out of some of these stories, and I can't recommend strongly enough this collection, Jesus Out
Thanks.
To Sea. There's a paragraph in there where you write, listen to Pledging My Love sometime and tell me you wouldn't chuck your box in the suburbs and push your boss off a roof to be 17 and hanging out at the drive-in again.
That's right.
And boy, isn't that the truth?
The 50s was a great decade to be around, hanging around in.
And
it was a great time. It really was. It was fun.
And then I can see why you could see the cinematic potential in this. Kitty Lamar Roshan.
Yeah.
She's a great character.
Says Kitty from Texas City.
Yeah, Texas City pops up a few times in the collection.
Yeah.
But it really was, I love the way you marry music and religion in The Night Johnny Ace Died. Marry's not the right word, but you kind of bring elements of music, religion, and the corruption that was running through the music industry then. And it's really fascinating to look back and see all of the things that were going on and some great plot twists with the characters that are in this story.
Yeah. Well, thanks. I remember many of those players, you see. I remember when Elvis played at the American Legion Hall in Houston in 1954. I think it was early 1954. And That's All Right, Mama had just come out. Boy, this guy went across the sky like a comet. There was no gradation. This guy's career just, it was like a burst of light on the horizon. He was a major talent. And I saw Smiley Lewis play, and some of the real greats. I saw a lot of great jazz musicians. You know, I saw Stan Kenton and George Shearing and Ella Fitzgerald, Oscar Peterson. And they were all around. You know, it was a great time for music.
Mm-hmm.
Jazz, swing, folk, R&B.
I think
race recordings.
Yeah, it probably was the golden age, I would say.
I think so, because everybody was around at one time. The swing bands from the 30s were still big. Even Glenn Miller's orchestra under Tex Beneke was still around. And then the progressive jazz groups had just come along. You know, Charlie Parker had a huge influence. Then rock and roll, people used to knock it, but I mean, rock and roll is here to stay. You know that song by Danny and the Juniors? We don't care what people say. Rock and roll is here to stay.
That's right. That's right. They were right. And Jim, in that particular story, The Night Johnny Ace Died, when you write that last paragraph and you get that last sentence, do you have a feeling as an author? I mean this one just came out of the heavens, because I mean it just ties the story up so nicely. Is that when you finish a line in a paragraph like that, do you just say thanks?
I do. Yeah. I do.
Because that last paragraph, I read it two or three times and I just said, wow, that is just perfect.
Well, I appreciate it. Yeah.
Let's move on to Water People. The interesting thing that I think one of the interesting things about Water People, it takes place right before Hurricane Audrey hit the Louisiana coast in 1957, and it kind of sets up some of the things really that that happened again, sadly, in 2005 with Katrina. And there was a line in Water People that, where you say people don't get to choose what they are.
Yeah.
And that is a Water People to me. It's kind of like in some of these stories, or you know, at certain levels, it's what lengths people have to go to try to make a buck from the from the bottom all the way up to the top.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a prize-winning story. It was selected as one of the best stories ever published by Algonquin Press.
Beautiful.
And, Algonquin put it together an anthology, I think, of the best story from each of its years since the inception of the press, and that was one that was chosen. I was always very honored to receive an award like that from a press of Algonquin's stature.
Yes, yes, and thank God for Algonquin. They're still plugging away and doing a great job.
Yeah.
Shannon Ravenel does a wonderful job down there.
Oh, we call her Saint Shannon Ravenel because she's done so much for so many writers.
Boy, she sure has.
Ravenel is a great person.
She sure has. And then another one of the of the beauties in the collection, Texas City, 1947, and I kind of made a note to myself here. I said this is kind of like a love song to nuns.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. That story actually was the seed for the novel, The Stained White Radiant.
Mm-hmm.
I started that story as a novel about a working class family severely impaired by the disaster in Texas City in 47, and it didn't work. And I shortened it into a long short story. I think it was 37 pages or so. And then I took the short story and reworked it into a Dave Robichaux novel.
Yeah, and Sister Roberta is a she's just a saint of a woman, and really takes an interest in Billy Bob. And I love it when she says, "Billy Bob, don't try to understand the world. It's not ours to understand. You must give up the things you can't change." And you could tell that she's just a salt of the earth type nun. Many of them, like when we talked about Katrina, a lot of the nuns are still doing great work, in the area.
That's right, yeah. My dad was at Texas City when it blew up.
No kidding.
Yeah, he was there. And when I was a little boy, I had rheumatic fever in the first grade, and I spent almost a year in bed, and there were two nuns from the school I attended. Bring me my lessons every afternoon or every couple of afternoons. And this was in Texas, boy, it was really hot. And they would have to walk through this pasture that had been burned, and they were wearing those black veils.
Hmm.
90-degree plus heat and humidity down on the coast. And I'll never forget them, those two. They bring me a holy card with each lesson.
Yeah.
They were great ladies.
That's beautiful.
These two ladies.
And then there's the story Mist, which is a little more contemporary. And this has some tough characters in it. Herm and Stanga.
Yeah. Terrible guys.
Yeah. Yeah, but I imagine that that after Katrina, there's a really horrifying scene where Lisa is trying to put her life back in order, and she goes to the unemployment office, and there's a very long line. And I'm sure that's actually a common occurrence that that people are looking for work and they don't want to go back to the lives they'd led. But desperate times sometimes call for desperate actions, and this story really kind of points that out.
Yeah, the story deals with this black woman, Lisa, who survives the flooding of the Ninth Ward, the lower Ninth Ward, and comes to live in New Iberia, and is presented with terrible choices in order to survive. She's an addict. And I think it's one of the best stories I've ever written, actually, but it deals with the post effects of the storm and the plight of many of the refugees. Yeah, the dislocation in Louisiana has been enormous. Depending on whom you talk with, the loss of homes, just homes, is somewhere between a quarter of a million and 400,000.
Homes?
Homes totally destroyed. See, from Lake Charles plumb over to Mississippi. It's hard for people sometimes to understand how widespread the destruction was and the ferocity of those storms. I grew up on the Gulf Coast, but my wife and I drove down into South Vermilion Parish. I've never seen anything like it. And, you know, I saw a degree of Audrey and Hilda. Those were bad ones. But as far as the eye could see, there's no living thing. It's nothing. It's like the aftermath of a nuclear holocaust. The trees were bare of leaves. The land was encrusted with saline. There were no animals at all. All the livestock perished. There was something like 100,000 cattle that drowned in two parishes.
Wow.
The cattle crowded onto roofs and into the second story of houses and drowned anyway. But the earth was just barren. It looked exactly like the Twilight Zone. I never saw anything like it. You know this guy who makes vacuum cleaners, Dave Orrick?
Yes.
I guess he was a bomber, an aviator in World War II. And a friend of mine who knows him told the story. He said Orrick flew over the Louisiana-Mississippi coast after Katrina, and he said the destruction he saw there was worse than the destruction in Japan after VJ Day, after the incendiary raids and the bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
Wow.
That's what I was told the man said, but it's pretty bad.
Yeah, and Jim, is anything being done?
Well, others can probably answer that question better than I.
Yeah.
It seems that I can't say.
Yeah. Yeah, I understand.
I
understand. Yeah.
Put it this way, it's the destruction was enormous. The level of destruction, the what's the term for it? The dysphoria? I can't pronounce that.
Yeah, I know.
The dispersal.
Yes.
Of the people.
Yeah.
Throughout the country, and the pressures that were already in place on the state of Louisiana financially and culturally, and the racial problems that in part, I think, no, not in part, they were engendered by the crack cocaine
that
was introduced into the projects in the early 80s. All of these influences were already there before the storm. And the storm was like a guillotine blade. ended up in prison. But anyway, the storm came along, and I don't know if Louisiana will be the same in my lifetime, put it that way.
Well, you go from the mist, and then we have the molester, the burning of the flag, and why Bugsy Siegel was a friend of mine, which are Nick Hauser. We could kind of lump them as Nick Hauser stories, kind of coming of age stories.
Yeah.
And I really like the slice of life that you give us in these three stories about what the world was like in not just the South but all over during that period of time, and why Bugsy Siegel was a friend of mine, is that's a great story as well.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I think that may be about the best story I ever wrote. But those three stories about the two boys, Charlie Rourke and Nick Hauser, during the 1940s, I think would make great adaptation. I don't think in Hollywood now there's a lot of interest in what are called period pieces. I don't understand that, but evidently, commercially, they're not very successful. I think Coal Mountain's failure probably created this trepidation about historical material. And I thought Coal Mountain was a masterpiece. Golly,
yes.
What a great film. And
yeah.
It bombed.
Yeah. Well, I interviewed Jeff Deaver last week, and he said he's going to write a screenplay with about a green monster and call it Shrek the Bone Collector.
Shrek the Bone Collector. Is he related to Michael Deaver?
You know, I don't know.
Deaver.
I don't know that. I've had Jeff on the show twice. What wonderful guy. Great sense of humor. And, yeah, he... he's run into some things in Hollywood, but he just said, Casey, it's just we could talk for hours, and none of it would make sense to you.
Well, my experience with the film industry has been pretty good. I had three films adapted, but you're correct. It's the market's unpredictable, but then someone comes along and he does something very unusual that seems to be destined for failure, and it becomes the Gone with the Wind.
Yeah.
Time.
And you're in the Electric Mist with Confederate Dead. I know on the website you've got updates on that, on jamesleeburke.com. You've got updates on the status and some pictures, which I find enjoying. And that has to be exciting for you.
Oh, yeah. The film is going to wrap up, I think, June 22nd. But boy, it has a wonderful cast. I think the screenplay is very good. And the director's a prince of a fellow, Bertrand Tavernier. He's really a nice gentleman.
Well, that's going to be great. Tommy Lee Jones as Dave Robichaux, correct?
That's right. And Mary Stenbergen plays his wife, Bootsy. And
oh, wonderful.
Tom Sizemore plays the Lafayette detective. And Buddy Guy plays the blues musician, Hogman Patin.
Oh, great.
Yeah, and John Sayles is in it. John,
no kidding.
Sayles, who is the director,
yeah,
plays the role of the director.
Oh, that's great. Oh, he'll be great in that role. I'm thinking back to the book, yeah.
John Goodman is in it. It has a great cast. The cast is just wonderful. Let's see, Kelly MacDonald plays in it, and the lady, Marcato, what's her first name? Oh, she's very good. Oh, heck, my head went blank.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, I mentioned Michael Deaver. He's a friend of mine. You know, he was in the Reagan administration.
Okay, yes.
He's a very nice gentleman. That's why I mentioned him.
Good. You know, I can't wait for the film. That's going to be exciting.
Uh-huh.
Well, Jim, that brings us to the masterpiece of the collection, Jesus Out to Sea. And I would say that this was published in Esquire, I believe, in April of 06.
Yeah.
And the reaction to it was so positive, I understand, that Esquire began running fiction more regularly again.
Yeah, that's right. That's a great compliment to the story. That's a fact. Yeah, they had kind of gone out of the fiction business, which I thought was a shame, because Esquire had such a great history in its publication of fine fiction and great American writers, including F. Scott Fitzgerald.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, an editor there called me. He said he would like me to try to write a story based on the storm, and I told him I didn't think I could do it. It's too big a subject. In truth, it's very depressing.
Yes.
What's happened to New Orleans and South Louisiana in general. But I went to Mass on Sunday afternoon. It's peculiar. And Pearl and I, my wife and I, were returning from church, and I walked into the kitchen there in New Iberia, and I said, "Jesus out to sea." I said, "That's it. That's the name of the story." And I called him up. I left a message on his machine. It was the weekend, and I said, "I'm going to get right on it." And I had remembered the story of the priest in the Lower Ninth Ward who tried to get people to evacuate, but see, 60% of the people in that neighborhood did not own automobiles, and those who did were found themselves at the end of the month.
Yeah, a couple weeks from payday. Yeah,
that's it.
Yeah,
and to go where? You know, that's the question. Go where? This is a fact. From New Orleans all the way to St. Louis, there was not one hotel available.
St. Louis?
Correct.
Wow.
When Rita hit, you know, it made landfall right down there on the Texas-Louisiana border 3.5 weeks later. There was not a motel available all the way to El Paso.
Wow.
The exodus was that large. So there were people who faulted those who were caught in the Lower Ninth Ward. Well, and these are people who daily, you know, try to just have enough to eat.
Mm-hmm.
So this priest stayed with his parishioners, and he drowned. He died with them. And I used him as, you know, the character in the story.
Father Jude LeBlanc?
Correct.
Yeah.
That's it. That was the source of the story in the Tenor of Blowdown. But it was also really the source of the story, Jesus Out to Sea.
Yeah, and it's all I can tell the listeners is that the short story "Jesus Out to Sea" is worth the price of the collection, because I've read it, I don't know, 8 or 10 times now, and it's just that's one where I'm not surprised that you went to Mass and came home with that idea, and it came out, because it's. And it had to be very difficult to write, because it's. But the imagery that you create in that story, we can save kids some tuition by having them read that story about how to write a masterful short story.
Oh, well, thank you.
And so, Jim, now we have Jesus Out to Sea in the stores, Tin Roof Blowdown, The New Robichaux in July, and then Pegasus Descending in paperback in August.
Yeah.
So a good summer for James Lee Burke fans. I've read The Galleys to Tin Roof Blowdown, and we'll talk about that next month. And so Robichaux fans are going to be thrilled and delighted. So in the meantime, they can get their appetite ready with Jesus Out to Sea, and I really appreciate you taking time, Jim, to talk about the stories, because this is just a sweetheart of a book.
Well, thanks, Casey. When you thank me for being on your show, it's like someone asking the Pope if he minds working Sundays with God.
Ha ha.
So I'll try to abide the situation. Is this I think goes on your website or on the air?
Yeah, what I do is I edit it. It will be on the website probably next week, and then Pamela can put it on your website. We can feature it on jamesleeburke.com like she did with Pegasus Descending, so fans can get to it through your website or through my website. And I'm just having a ball talking to my favorite authors about the topic I'm passionate about, which is great literature.
Well, thanks a million. Now, you're in Ohio, right?
Columbus, Ohio.
Columbus,
Ohio, yeah. And been here a long time. Hope to stay here a long time to come.
I used to drive a truck up through there many years ago for the U.S. government for the Job Corps.
Yeah, I tell people Columbus, Ohio is a nice place to live. You really wouldn't want to visit here. But it does have a lot of nice aspects to it. Cost of living is reasonable, and it's a very nice place to live. And so Ohio State University is here, so we have a nice culture here as well. So
you ever hear the expression, everybody in East Kentucky knows his 3 R's: reading, writing, and the road to Dayton?
That's right. Absolutely.
Pete Rose was just a rookie then.
Yeah.
Johnny Bench.
Yeah, talk about the glory days of a franchise.
Pardon?
Talk about the glory days of a franchise.
It was that old park's gone, but it was a grand park.
Yeah, it sure was. It sure was.
Well, thanks again for having me.
Yeah, Jim, and then when Tin Roof Blowdown comes out, we'll do it again, and we'll get this one up and running. And congratulations again, and I'll talk to you soon.
I sure appreciate it.
Okay, Jim.
Let's see you, partner.